Welcome back to episode 212. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, another exciting week. Before we get on our main topic, we had some reports from South Africa that there were some rioting. South Africa government plans troop surge to quell unrest. Reports. South Africa plans to deploy up to 25,000 soldiers in two provinces where security forces are struggling to quell days of looting, arson, and violence. Its defense minister told a parliamentary committee on Wednesday, according to local news channel, ENCA. The military surge of that size would increase tenfold the number of soldiers deployed in the hotspots of KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng provinces, where the police and army have been battling unrest for days. We now have submitted a request for deployment of about 25,000 members, according to a video recording of defense and military veterans ministers Nozizi Mapisa Nakwela, shown on ENCA. So they're having trouble in the Rainbow Nation. Apparently the riots were sparked by, the arrest or the criminal charges being brought against the former president Zuma, some sort of corruption charges or something.
Yeah, very confused situation. There's actually a number of rumors about what set it all off. I read a few things. I haven't a clue as to what's going on down there.
But the rioting, supposedly with political motivations, has devolved into looting, arson, shopping malls being ransacked. I think a water treatment center was destroyed, burned down.
Are you talking about Chicago?
Yeah, and people said this is coming to America soon. What are you talking about? So there's trouble in the Rainbow Nation. It's South Africa. What happened? We did a show on South Africa, how many Americans have a complete misunderstanding of the history of South Africa, what the situation was there. And I was talking about today at work how, in the 80s, in early 90s, in order to virtue signal, you had to get arrested outside the South African embassy to oppose apartheid, this horrible system. And most Americans thought it was like the United States. It was racial segregation, and the whites there were just cruel. They enslaved the blacks in South Africa, the Bantu blacks. And of course, it's a lot more complicated than that. The eponymous nation was created by the Afrikaners who went in there in the 17th and 18th century. And they kind of, there was the Great Trek, and they established these free states, and they developed it. And then there was pretty much international finance, Cecil Rhodes, the Rothschilds, Jewish financiers just that brought in cheap labor, and they swamped the area, and the demographics started to change. And so they, in 1948, they institutionalized what was then custom was apartheid, when the apartheid government took over. And then it became sort of this pariah state, because of what was happening in the West, particularly the United States, with desegregation and what was going on in the South. A lot of people saw it through that lens, but it's a completely different history. And it was the white South Africans who actually created the modernized country, which then people emigrated to, Africans, a lot of Indians too, were brought in for cheap labor. And so it's a completely different story than most people are aware of. And so you have this very small minority. I think at one time they constituted like half the population in the mid 20th century. Now they're down to, by the time of the part they ended, they're less than 10%. So demographics just meant the system could no longer be maintained. But we argued that, I think you agreed with me, that what should have been done in 1990, if you're going to end the system, they should have created a white free state that was sovereign and separate. But they wanted one state. And of course, what's happened in South Africa is pretty predictable. It's going to follow along lines of most of Black Africa, post-colonial Black Africa.
It's going to become another Chicago.
Yeah. The same thing's happened in Rhodesia. And, again, a lot of it is reason why apartheid ended was because it pretty much had shelf life had expired. And one thing that the globalists don't want is a functional government on the continent of on Africa in general, because they don't want a government that actually is sovereign, may actually represent the interests of its people, because international finance and globalism wants access to the resources. And South Africa is a good example of that. They want a dysfunctional, corrupt state, and one man, one vote, one time type situation that you get. And of course, the, you know, the type of ruling black ruling class you get are these, so these satraps that are perfect, you know, for international corruption and bribery, you know. So
yeah, you know, it's interesting. The history of South Africa would be a great one for the critical race theorists to take up and try to get to the bottom of, to see, you know, all of how the racism zigged and zagged, because what they'll find if they get into it is just a big fat Rothschild.
Yeah.
You had the Boers who were, you know, kind of impoverished Christians who really, I don't think you can, you know, see them as like a racially evil. I mean, you know, they're just trying to establish a place for their existence. But then when they found the minerals, Rhodes, who was basically a henchman for the Rothschild family, brought in, you know, the British military to get rid of the Boers so they could have complete control over the mineral rights. Mm-hmm. And Beers and all of the British mining companies came in, all of it financed by the Rothschilds. Churchill's father worked there. During the Boer War, there's actually recorded, attestations of Rudyard Kipling, Cecil Rhodes, and Baron Rothschild being alone in a room, having messages brought to them and giving instructions to the field generals.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely serious. And those three would then vacation on Rhodes's summer, he had plantation in South Africa. So they would send their time, you know, just a Masonic cesspool. But my point is that South Africa was a Judeo-Masonic, as we experience it today, was a Judeo-Masonic project which slaughtered the Africans and slaughtered the Boers to set up a dysfunctional country,
mm-hmm.
Which could never have any strength, right? Because as you said, Tim, they don't want a strong, stable country in South Africa. And in fact, I am willing to bet anything that there is still Judaic Masonic control inside the government. Particularly in terms of the mineral rights and the wealth that's being extracted, hardly any of it seems to be getting into the hands of the people of South Africa. As far as I can tell, the mineral companies are doing just fine. So, the state of South Africa, as it exists, suits the oligarchs in the same way that Chicago and Portland suits them, mm-hmm. in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Witnesses claim lightning destroyed George Floyd mural in Ohio. A mural of George Floyd collapsed in Ohio, but there were conflicting accounts about whether the cause was a lightning strike or structural issues. Police in Toledo said the large mural honoring Floyd, who was killed by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin last May, setting off worldwide protest, was reduced to rubble around 5 p.m. Tuesday outside the building that previously housed a bar at Summit and LaGrange Street in Toledo, the Toledo Blade reported. Well, maybe that's a message from God. A weather radar operated by WTVG detected a lightning strike in the block at about 4:30 p.m. Tuesday, the station reported. Right before the storm hit, I just pulled in my driveway and it wasn't down. Susan Keller, who lives nearby, told WTVG, I would have noticed it right away. I noticed it when they put it up, and I would have noticed it when it came down. Police were later seen outside the building, setting up a barrier around a fallen pile of bricks, WTVG reported. Keller said she hopes the beautiful piece gets restored.
Good God.
As the city officials differ on what exactly caused it to come down. I guess I wonder whose property it is. Why don't they give them the permit to paint it, to put up a mural in the first place?
I just don't think that the George Floyd kind of legend really has legs. Do you? I mean, it's hard to imagine.
Well, it's a beautiful, I saw it. It was just sort of a hokey. Yeah, this, I could see some skill in the artwork. And obviously the rendering resembled George Floyd, I guess. But a great piece of artwork? No, I don't think so. But anyway,
it's like, I mean, but some guy that, you know, kind of is, I mean, you know, was a pornographer. He was a participant in pornography films, yeah, and a fentanyl addict. I mean, that's about it, right? I mean, it's, in terms of the CV, yeah, I don't know that much about him, but that's what I read in the papers. So I'm just going to go with it. I don't think this is going to, like, you know, put him in the same class as, like, Alexander the Great. I mean, I just think that, you know, 2,000 years from now, we will probably not remember him. So all these monuments, I don't know. I think they must have, like, an immediate political purpose, Tim. Perhaps that's what's going on.
Maybe that, yeah, maybe that's it, yeah.
Could be, yeah.
I love it. The beautiful piece of art. Yeah, right, lady. Okay. this is just 25 under the age of... just 25 of those under the age of 18 died from COVID in England. Hundreds died from suicide and trauma from the lockdown. This is Summit News. Paul Joseph Watson. New what figures. City? I'm sorry.
Where was that, Tim?
This is in England.
This in England, okay.
Yeah. New figures released by researchers in the UK show that just 25 under 18s died from COVID from March 2020 to February 2021. Two-thirds of whom had chronic health conditions, so that's dubious in of itself right there, whether they died from COVID, and that the lockdown measures aimed at children may have proved a greater risk than SARS-CoV-2 itself. Gee, I've been saying that since the beginning. Numbers show that there is around 1 in 500,000 chance of children dying from coronavirus in England. That includes victims of pre-existing medical conditions like heart disease and cancer. More than 75% of the children who died had chronic conditions. Well, two-thirds had more than one underlying condition, and 60% had life-limiting conditions. Of course, Daily Mail, during the same period, 124 died from suicide, and 268 died from trauma. So that's your death.
Yeah, there you have it. The most kind of painful COVID news to me this week was Sydney. You know, they've locked it down, and of course, now they're extending. Mm-hmm. Because they keep finding new variants, you know, Epsilon, Delta, Zambata, Ferrari. They keep finding new variants. But they've got the 5.5 million people locked down, and it is a slave state, man. I mean, you can go out of your house for an hour, 2 hours to get food. You can only exercise with someone in your residence for 1 hour. You can only go, like, I don't know, some short distance from your house, have to carry your papers with you at all time. They're bringing in the military, at least this was what was reported to me, mm-hmm. To make sure there's compliance. It's a slave state. I mean, it is a 100% slave state. There's some really good Aussie bloggers and people who, you know, create podcasts who are there, and basically they're just saying, you know, you need to prepare to get out at a moment's notice and find a way out through the roadblocks, you know, get your camper ready. I mean, they're advocating, though, the people that I was listening to this week were advocating either leaving immediately or prepare to leave, because if this goes for, you know, like as it did in Melbourne for over 100 days, Tim, I mean, this could, you would start to have real psychological damage. Mm-hmm. You have to defend yourself. So, you know, it may be the case. This will be kind of like a, you know, East Berlin setup where, you know, people will be fleeing, being chased by guard dogs.
Well, it's almost like, I don't think it was that severe in East Berlin. I think East Berlin could go to a tavern.
Yeah, it never wasn't bad. You have to wear a mask, you know.
Yeah. I mean, so... Related story, New Zealand is facing a crisis with children falling ill in high numbers due to immunity debt caused by COVID-19 lockdowns. We talked about this last year, doctors have warned. Experts warn of a nasty RSV outbreak. Hospitals across the country have been flooded with babies with a potentially deadly respiratory virus. Wellington has recorded 46 children hospitalized with respiratory illnesses, including respiratory syncytial virus, also known as RSV. RSV is a common respiratory illness, and in adults only produces very mild symptoms, but for younger children, it can make them seriously or extremely ill or even be fatal. Doctors have warned New Zealand's outbreak is likely due to children not developing immunity to other viruses suppressed by the COVID lockdown. See? So because they weren't out and about doing leading regular lives, their immune systems weren't being exposed or, you know, developing properly. Epidemiologist and public health professor Michael Baker said, what we're seeing now is we've accumulated a whole lot of susceptible children that have missed out on exposure. So now they're seeing it for the first time. Lockdowns in New Zealand last winter led to a 99.9% reduction in flu cases. I wonder why. And a 98% reduction in RSV. Well, that's not good. But over the past 5 weeks, New Zealand has reported nearly 1,000 RSV cases, according to the Institute of Environmental Science and Research. Professor Baker added, if you get a big peak, it can overwhelm your health system or put real pressure on it, which is what
we see. Boy, we're going to have to lock those kids down.
But I mean, this
we're
is
going to overwhelm the hospitals.
I mean, this is what people were saying. He added, now people are experiencing near universal exposure to RSV as children, and said most are exposed in the first year of life. So because of the supposed containment measures, they weren't exposed to it. So their immune system didn't develop properly. So now they're susceptible, where if they just hadn't done anything, you wouldn't have this problem. Well, this is true across the board, is, you know, by locking people down, keeping them out of the sun, keeping from, you know, engaging with other people, their immune systems haven't developed properly. And this is obviously foreseeable. You know, so there's no excuse for this, not foreseeing something like this.
What was the plan? I mean, yeah. At this point, I would just say, you know, if someone doesn't understand that the lockdown was deliberately malevolent, go get your vaccine. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Because you're in a dream world, and there was enough points of reference for any normal functioning intelligence to pick this up. Humans should have understood this. And if you are still in this dream state of the government is good, they're trying their best, then I can only say that I don't know what we could offer such a person, Tim, in terms of, you know, like discourse. They really do need their vaccination. And I mean, this is a cruel thing to say, but you know, I've noticed, and I could be wrong about this, and of course, you know, it's easy to anthropomorphize in such situations, but the people that I know that have got the vaccine, I think they're a little brain dead. I've noticed that just in talking to them, they don't quite seem to have the spark that they did before the vax. This, I could just be imagining it, but it does seem from time to time, I'm noticing this. So such an individual, if that is a correct reading, would be perfect, right? He'd have a complete dream world, and his even brain would be in a dream state, you know? So they've really won in terms of destroying the humanity of that individual, of that particular individual. So, you know, if at this point, when you see something, a data point like that, what other understanding can there be other than the government is a malevolent secret society?
Mm-hmm. This is about a couple of your neighbors, a role model for other families. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle receive environmental award for enlightened decision to have only two children. So they've gone Chinese on us. Population Matters, a UK environmentalist organization, has chosen Prince Harry and Meghan Markle as recipients of an award for the enlightened decision to only have two children. The pair currently only have one son, Archie, born in 2019. According to Independent, a spokesperson from the Population Matters said, in choosing and publicly declaring their intention to limit their family to two, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are helping to ensure a better future for their children and providing a role model for other families. Having a smaller family reduces our impact on the earth and provides a better chance for all our children, their children, and the future generations to flourish on a healthy planet. We recommend the Duke and Duchess for taking this enlightened decision and for affirming that a smaller family is also a happy family. Prince Harry said, I've always thought this the place is borrowed, and surely being as intelligent as we are, well, he thinks very highly of himself, or as evolved as we all are supposed to be, we should be able to leave something better behind for the next generation. So,
you know, Tim, I don't want to trash talk a local boy, but I could get into these guys are so sensitive about the environment. I know their house. I've been in it before. I mean, it was, you know, because it was, they were like charity things. I mean, this isn't the social class we swirl in, but we've lived here for 35 years. We know everybody. And we've been in the house a number of times. Tim, I mean, it's like 30,000 square feet. It's got like a wine cellar that's bigger than my entire home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all I can say is that, you know, if you really want to like reduce your footprint, maybe start with your residence and try to, you know, work backwards. So, you know, I mean, hey, what can you say about that? It's just, you know, they use people like Meghan and Harry as propaganda devices. I mean, everyone understands that at this point, right? They're not real people. You know, they're not, what we learn of them is not real. It's just what is they think will affect us. And they think with something like that, you know, they're giving the clue that, you know, we're all in this together and that there is some kind of, you know, population problem, so that we should think about population reduction in a good light, right? Not something that the oligarchs are doing so they can be on the planet by themselves.
Yeah, and because for some reason we should be concerned with, you know, Meghan Markle, a former actress and game show hostess or something, right?
I don't even know Harry, for heaven's sakes, but yeah. I would just assume, I mean, you know, there isn't much here to think about. It's just propaganda. You know, it seems to me that all of the narratives are getting woven together to support population reduction as mm-hmm. a good thing. I think we're going to get a real strong, you know, climate crisis, kind of force going forward, because the vax, you know, they're kind of running out of steam, I think, with this approach. So they may, you know, go back to no babies the next, you know, phase, try to just get us out of here.
Meantime, we got to bring in immigration because of the labor shortages.
Yeah, that's right. We're busting them up from Central America, taking them into the center of the United States and dropping them off. Yeah, you can see how concerned they are about the population reduction, sure.
This is funny. Well, not funny, haha, but funny. Governor Cuomo seizes emergency powers to fight gun violence and public health emergency. So just like we did with COVID. On Tuesday, Governor Andrew Cuomo pioneered a new strategy to grasp for new dictatorial power, declaring gun violence in the state of New York as a public health crisis and a disaster emergency. Cuomo touted his first in the nation initiative as a positive step for New York rather than an excuse to circumvent the legislature. Cuomo even cited his own tyrannical abuses during COVID-19 pandemic as precedent for his overreach. So under his leadership and of course, de Blasio, New York, they create anarcho-tyranny, and because of the policies they impose, the restrictions, and also their depolicing and letting the riots, take place. And then they use it as an excuse for more power to impose gun control. I love it. It's like, yeah, like into a public health crisis. It's like,
yeah. So I wanted to interject something that I had slightly off topic, but I think it's sort of interesting and it is useful. The vaccine is still sort of, I think, the most central problem that we're facing, obviously, at the moment. Incidentally, the VAERS data brought in 3,000 deaths a few hours ago. Last Friday, that it had gone up from 7,000 recorded to 9,000, and that 2,000 had doubled the previous high in a week. But then this week it went up 3,000. So you can see they're boiling the frog slowly. So it's up to 11,000. That is still just It's not a drop in the bucket, but it's certainly not half, probably not even a quarter. It's hard to say exactly because they don't have the right data, but you can tell where the median is in terms of the fatalities. And this one guy, Follow the Eagle, brilliant statistician, he's worked out a way to do that. So he can see that last week, for example, when they brought in 2,000, they'd only picked up 3 days in terms of moving the median forward. So they actually lost last ground when they gave the number. So this is what they're doing. They're just bringing out minimal numbers to try to slowly get the public used to these data points. I mean, it's just a complete bloodbath out there, a complete bloodbath. The fact is that, you know, there is this number which has been tossed around and been argued over, that there is only 1 in 100 or less than 1 in 100 that's actually reported by VAERS, which stands for the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is run by CDC. And this number has been, you know, contested. Different people, you know, they demand the citation and things like this. Well, anyway, I got a hold of the study from which it comes, and it's online. And I think it's one of these things sort of like the authoritarian personality. Everyone should read, alert citizens should know about. It's called Electronic Support for Public Health Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And it was brought out in 2010, and the study ran for 3 years. And the principal investigator, his last name is Lazarus. So it's easy to find online. People are curious. And so I was actually, I didn't even understand how their data system was set up. And what they did was absolutely ingenious. And it just so straightforward in such a, you know, correct way to get the system to work properly. So what they did was, is they took a computer system and they went to a series of, like it was a hospital setup, a Harvard Pilgrim. And they just tracked everyone for everything, right? They tracked 715,000 patients. Now they had 1.4 million doses of vaccines, but these were given to 376,000 people. And they tracked them all. They tracked them before and they tracked them after. So they had all of the activity that would take place in the medical system that they had under this kind of scrutiny. So because of that, they could say that, and they posted in the report, they say that adverse events from drugs and vaccines, both drugs and vaccines, are common but underreported. And then they said that, and for drugs, although 25% of patients experience an adverse drug event, less than 0.3% of all adverse drug events are reported to FDA. And then they said, likewise, fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported. Now, they point out that this low reporting rate makes it really hard to know what's going on with the drugs. It's really very, very difficult. So they automated it. Okay, so what they did with their system is that for 30 days, now bear in mind, they're only the snapshot that they took, because this, what they set up was a model. It wasn't the actual system that they had in mind, which would be universal and would track basically everyone. But what they did was they took a snapshot in 30 days, in a 30-day period, and that gave them, you know, data of all of these different individuals over the 3 years that they were involved in taking this 30-day snapshot. So you end up with all kinds of data. And basically it shows that if you go in for Vax X, all of your medical activity for the next 30 days are charted. So you end up with if you took Vax X and then had a statistically significant increase in a particular reaction, then the computer just says, this probably is coming from Vax X, right? It just, So it was a mechanical way of creating signals. And it was perfect because it was set up to track everyone. If you had a vax that was creating damage, it would pop up immediately within 30 days, and you'd be able to have just completely real evidence, because you would have people who hadn't taken it, and you could compare that to those who had, and you could say, okay, this is the controlling variable, and we know now that you had, MMR created, some result that was bad within 30 days in this unusual percentage, and therefore we can claim that MMR is creating this damage. Now, there is at the end of their little result thing, they have the most amazing sentence that I have ever seen, Tim. I have never seen a sentence like this in any actual science paper. And this is a legitimate science paper, which incidentally, just for an amusement, the group that puts this together is from the US Department of Health and Human Services. Right now, it's for the CDC. But this is coming from the U.S. The group that's putting together are not, some radical college, sophomores. This is just the Health Services Department. And they, so they go, God, this is great. We have a way here. We can actually look with our computer systems and think about with artificial intelligence how easy this would be. Unfortunately, Tim, it never actually was put into effect. Because here's the sentence, which is just critical. It says, unfortunately, I'm reading right from the document. It says, unfortunately, there was never an opportunity to perform system performance assessments because the necessary CDC contacts were no longer available. And the CDC consultants responsible for receiving data were no longer responsive to our multiple requests to proceed with testing and evaluation. I just wanted to, I'll read it one more time because it's just incredible. Unfortunately, there was never an opportunity to perform system performance assessments because the necessary CDC contacts were no longer available. Where'd they go?
Yeah.
And the CDC consultants responsible for receiving data were no longer responsive to our multiple requests to proceed with testing and evaluation. Okay, so they went ghost. Now, I'll tell you what happened. They realize in the CDC, and you know what this is about, they realize this would show autism. This would, if they had set up that system, a tracking system like that, you would 100% be able to see the relationship between vaccines and autism, because the computer, it would create, control groups automatically. It would just say, here's 1,000 kids who haven't had MR. They're the same age. Here's a group that had, there's a signal. There's more kids having. So they realized that. They realized that. And they had no way to criticize. They didn't want to go on record saying, well, such a straightforward and obvious and mechanical process that gives real and great signals. We can't criticize it. So they just decided to just pretend it doesn't exist. They literally wouldn't answer the phone. So the thing is, whenever you get into a vaccine discussion and this 1% comes up, well, first of all, it's a lot fewer than 1 in 100. They're only looking at 30 days. It's a 30-day period that actually generates that more. There's a lot of vax damage that gets reported outside of 30 days, but none of that would have popped up in this. But the thing that is so clear is that the CDC is absolutely malevolent. They're evil because they would not let their sister government agency set up an obvious and simple to do control over all of the drugs and vax and all the damage they do, because they want the damage to exist and they don't want it to be reported to the public. So when they talk now about informed consent, Tim, no one in America is capable of informed consent. No one. Because when you look at this, you realize there is no data in terms of drugs and vaccines. There's no real data. there's only propaganda, 100%. So we are in a, you know, in a difficult position in that, you know, a lot of parents feel that the doctors are valuable for their children, and the children are, of course, as those tragic children in New Zealand you reported on, because of the environment they grew up in, a lot of them seem to be ill. But I don't know what to say other than, you know, you, in terms of this, notice that they picked up drugs. It was the same thing, the same, you know, there was underreporting and drug adverse effects. Man, I don't use doctors. I don't use the chemicals. I will let them stitch me up or knit a bone. But other than that, I won't get near them. If I was a parent, I wouldn't know what to, what, just what to do at this point, you know, with illnesses and children. But boy, I would sure study this document to understand that the claims about the safety. I mean, when you think about, to think about someone like Hotez or Paul Offit, the Masonic cesspool, you know, drug promoters in the United States, they know this perfectly well. They absolutely know this. They know there is no data. They've kept the data from coming into existence. So when they talk about the safety, well, what are they talking about? You say, well, it's safe. There's no events reported. Well, there's no events reported because the CDC consultants don't pick up the phone, right? That's why there's no events
reported. So you can't make the report, yeah.
You can't make the report, you know? So what they left us with is VAERS, because they know perfectly well that something that's led up to the public is not going to produce all of the numbers. They can contest it in any case as being a public created data set. And since all the data comes to them, they can just extract anything that they want in order to keep the boiling frog thing going forward. That's why when you look at like the VAERS numbers that came out a few hours ago about the 3,000 people who died that they've reported now, because they didn't die last week. These are people who died in January. Mm-hmm. You are looking at, they will control, and then I'll just shut up here, but I will just also say the other thing, the other part of this is that there are no autopsies. Mm-hmm. There's been one autopsy, one, of someone who was vaxxed. This is a telltale sign. Tim, this is absolutely clear evidence that they're suppressing the damage that the vax is doing. Because believe me, with like 800 million doses, they've had a lot more than one vax person pass away. They've had tens of thousands. There hasn't been any autopsies done. There have been a couple people complaining now about the lack of autopsies. But anyone who, you know, hears our show, who is in a position, who has a loved one, I mean, it's grisly stuff. But man, for God's sakes, anyone who can demand autopsies. There are ways to find out, evidently, if the spike protein is responsible. The one guy who they did do an autopsy on, he had the spike protein was everywhere, but they couldn't be sure it killed him because he had so many things wrong with him that they couldn't really give a single cause of death. But with a number of people having been autopsied, you'd get to the bottom of it. And I'm telling you, it's just obvious to me that when they get if we can get enough autopsies done, you're going to find that the vax is a lot more lethal than we think. And this is just the acute phase, right? This is just, it's just killing them right on the spot or over a couple months. I mean, wait till next winter when you start getting, if there's any, you know, real long-term effects.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, and then it's so far removed from the time they got the injection that they'll be able to cover up.
They'll call it COVID. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So there was it. I think I saw. I think it was sent to me a picture of Steven Crowder. He had a sign that said the Delta variant is a side effect of the vaccine. So.
It is. Yeah. Of course it is.
But, you know, we're saying these things apparently is troubling to our government. President Biden on Friday said that social media companies that allow coronavirus misinformation, the type of misinformation you just shared, to spread on their platforms are killing people. escalating a fight with Facebook and other companies as the White House warns about the spread of inaccurate information about COVID-19 vaccines. Biden was asked by reporters at the White House on Friday afternoon what his message to social media platforms on coronavirus misinformation. That's not in quotes, by the way. They're killing people. The only pandemic we have is among the unvaccinated, and they're killing people, Biden said. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy issued an advisory Thursday labeling health misinformation urgent threat amid the Biden administration's push to get more people vaccinated. Murthy said misinformation is among a range of reasons why some Americans are not getting vaccinated against COVID-19, despite vaccinations being widely available. Modern technology companies have enabled misinformation to poison our information environment with little accountability to their users, Murthy said during an appearance in the White House briefing room on Thursday. They've allowed people who intentionally spread misinformation, what we call disinformation, to an extraordinary reach. The White House is asking Facebook and other social media companies to be more aggressive in removing harmful posts that spread disinformation and flagging posts that spread information, according to the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. We are regularly making sure social media platforms are aware of the latest narratives dangerous to the public health that we may and many other Americans are seeing across all social and traditional media. And we work to engage with them to better understand the enforcement of social media platform policies, Psaki told reporters Friday. Psaki, as an example, noted false narratives that the coronavirus vaccine caused infertility that has spread on the internet. We want to know that the social media platforms are taking steps to address it, Psaki said. That is inaccurate, false information. The effort to combat disinformation comes as the vaccination rate has slowed across the country, and more contagious Delta variant has spread among the unvaccinated Americans, causing COVID-19 cases to rise after they were on decline. Biden's comments Friday afternoon echoed those of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention Director Rochelle Walensky, who warned earlier in the day that COVID-19 is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated. We are seeing outbreaks of cases in parts of the country that have low vaccination coverage because unvaccinated people are at risk, Walensky told reporters during the public health briefing. Well, this is interesting because, you know, they call it disinformation, misinformation, spreading all over the internet. I don't know, are they gonna be held accountable? The CDC's gonna be held accountable for their disinformation, misinformation? I mean, CDC's been all over the place, like, you know, regarding masks. They've spread the misinformation that masks are effective in preventing disease and spread when they're not. What about the disinformation they spread years ago about the swine flu epidemic that didn't exist? talk about using platforms. But nevertheless, you have the White House. This is a matter of public policy that should be debated. The doctors who aren't on board with the government narrative should be allowed free to debate these things, to present evidence and debate. And they're obviously trying to suppress any meaningful debate on the matter, just calling disinformation, then invoking public health as if, you know, those who question the narratives of the CDC, the World Health Organization, or the Biden administration are a danger to public health. You know, this is absurd. It's so ham-fisted. This is going to backfire. I mean, this is a joke. You are the President of the United States openly calling for censorship. Now, for what I understand, he swears an oath up to uphold and defend the Constitution. Within the Constitution is free speech. So now he's encouraging or telling these social media or tech companies to engage in censorship. He's violating his oath. He's encouraging companies to violate free speech, which is a violation of his oath of office. He may not be doing it directly. He's farming it out to the tech sector, the social media companies. That's like the CIA hiring a mafia hitman to carry out an assassination and having plausible deniability on this. It's obviously a ham-fisted attempt at censorship because they can't contend with the evidence that's being thrown back at them. You know, let's talk about false information. Let's talk about bloated or exaggerated death rates, because they started counting everyone who died from COVID, you know, about the death certificates. Let's talk about, calling infections based on the PCR test, which which its own developer said, don't use it for diagnostic purposes. They used it. Let's talk about, explain how they ran the cycles up to 40 cycles. So they got, you know, they got a bunch of false positive tests to maintain the illusion of a pandemic. Let's talk about how the WHO itself redefined what pandemic is. So you don't even have to have people who are seriously ill. You can have a pandemic. They don't define, they use terms like outbreak and infections. What do these terms mean? What's an outbreak? What's an infection? I mean, do they show any evidence of a serious outbreak? Is there a real pandemic? Are people dying? Are people in the hospital? No, they just have these positive tests. And the tests are completely bogus. What are all that misinformation they spread? The fact that they even called it a pandemic when there never really was or is a pandemic. Talk about disinformation. I mean, geez, give me a break.
Yeah. Here in California, I think this is probably everywhere, but it's insanity squared. Our daily scoreboard now tracks 5 variants. So we have 267 epsilon. This is the current 170 alpha, 26 gamma pi, 8 betas, and 4 deltas. This was the lineup. Yeah. So, but the thing is,
are these fraternities?
No, I mean, it's like, and they have a little description of it. It's like first detected, the epsilon was first detected in California in the West Coast. It's there's no indication that it evades immunity. Vaccines are if still effective. Alpha. Now, this was first detected in the UK in fall of 2020. It's concerning because it is more than 50% more transmissible than, and therefore has an increased associated risk. But there is no indication that it invades immunity, so vaccines are still effective against it. Gamma, first detected in Brazil in the laboratory environment, gamma does show reduced vaccine and post-infection convalescent immune response, so we don't really know. And then beta, first detected in South Africa, and then here, it best served with white wine. It's just Delta, first detected in India. We've got 4 deltas.
Well, I mean, is anyone actually dying? I mean,
now you have to bear in mind, guess how many people are in the ICU? Zero. We have zero ICU occupies, and yet here we are. I mean, the epsilons, the alpha, the gammas, the betas, the delta, they're surrounding us. Like aliens from outer space.
When they say detected, do they isolate it? I mean, they've never isolated the coronavirus, the SARS-CoV-2. The COVID-19, they never isolated it. So it's like, I mean, they can just label these things and give them names, and I guess we just assume they're real because it's science. But I mean, let's talk about misinformation. How about the fact that they're calling the mRNA jab a vaccine when it's not a vaccine? Talk about the misinformation.
How about that? You want to talk about misinformation?
Misinformation. I mean,
why is it called a vaccine when it's absolutely 100% what has always been described as gene therapy?
It's gene therapy. It's a technology. They're calling it a vaccine. Talk about misinformation. You know, Jeez.
But I have a question, Tim. I didn't get the Biden vax salesman show up at the door, and I haven't really, I've got my feelers out, my vast array of like 5 people I know in the United States. And they all report the same thing, that there's no activity. They haven't seen any, heard any. I mean, have you heard any in your local area?
No.
Have you
seen any? No, I guess maybe they're being trained. They got to do a crash course of like med school or something, maybe, so that they can come out.
I really don't think they need to be trained much. I mean, they just walk up to the door and hand you a piece of paper and then ask you if they can come and vax you, you know? So I don't know. We'll see if that thing rolls out. But I thought it was more agitprop than anything.
Well, here's the thing. The Surgeon General is talking about misinformation. Now, his predecessor admitted to lying to the public about face masks. Some point, he said, early on, he said, don't wear masks, they're not effective. And then later on, the mask craze kicked in, I guess, in the spring of 2020. And they said, well, they had to lie to the public about it for political reasons. They didn't want to rush on masks. So they're admitting that they're dispensing public health and medical advice based on politics. Fauci did the same thing. I mean, contradicted himself. So what's misinformation when you're trying to keep up with the latest contradiction coming out of the CDC, the World Health Organization? You know, the fact that at one time, hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin weren't effective, now they are effective. So which is it? When is it? You know.
Also, what happened to free speech? I mean, if I have a mistaken understanding and I want to express it, aren't I constitutionally capable of having my bad idea be expressed because that's just what I want to do? I mean, if it's a bad idea, just roll out the argument against it. And I'm sure the reasonable people will see how powerful your argument is. And then I won't, but I have the constitutional right to make the expression.
Yes.
And yet this is not what they are asserting here, is it?
No, and you have a White House that now says it's coordinating a campaign with these companies to suppress that, and they're using the cover. It's misinformation on social media. It's radicalizing. It's radicalizing. I mean, what's more radical than trying to coerce people into getting taking part in a medical experiment? You know, just because you board a commercial flight or want to go to an amusement park or something doesn't mean you consent to medical experimentation, or you are attending a university or college doesn't mean you consented being part of a medical experiment. You know, then the fact that they're trying to make you do it is a violation of the Nuremberg Code, you know, because now it's not informed there. It's a medical experiment. You know, this is the disease which officially has more than a 99.7% cure survival rate. And they're trying to subject the entire population to this medical experiment. You know, it's a drug. I mean, do they tell the people this drug is not approved by the FDA? How can they call it safe? Talk about misinformation. You know, this is drugs not approved. You cannot legally call it safe, whatever that word means, because it's not approved. It has emergency use authorization based on a false claim of an emergency. When you just look at the death rate and the real death rate, which they admit has been exaggerated by, you know, like 95%, because if you impose the death reporting standards that were in place until 2019, the death rate would drop 95% from this thing. So what does that suggest is going on here?
Well, let me give you some hard data.
Big fraud.
You can see how desperate they are. I actually have a graph in front of me. Now, I don't have it for my county, Santa Barbara County, but I have it for San Luis Obispo. But believe me, it's exactly the same in our county. They call us the tri-counties. We behave in exactly the same way. Now, on May the 10th in San Luis Obispo, they had 86,023 people vaxxed. Now, 2 months later, 88,000. And this is in a county that has like 350,000 or something like that, 300,000. So, I mean, they, between January and May, they had a nice steep curve going up. And then when they hit the vax resistance, boom. And I mean, it flatlines. So think of all the propaganda that this county has been subjected to. I mean, just like every other county, I mean, like, you know, the private schools won't let you in. Your boss is telling you to lose the job. You, if you want to go to Mexico or you're traveling, and yet with all of that, in with that bombardment, they haven't even picked up 1% of the population. And what that is, what that represents, and I'm almost positive, is just the feeble-minded. They've just sopped up the, because remember, they're still getting some people in retirement homes and things like that. So this is basically zero. And that is going on for 2 months now. And that is America fighting back. That's real, real data. And you see, you can't get this in California. They jimmy up all the numbers up there in Sacramento. So you have to go to local and go county by county with the little, those that have set up data sets. So you can actually see that, you know, after a certain point, the people just said no. And there's just two things. I mean, it's the vax damage that becomes visible, and it's the independent media just, you know, telling people You know, there's all these other things to worry about.
I was just looking around and seeing no one's sick or was ever that sick.
Well, what about that? So, yeah.
You know,
after a year and a half, it's like, I don't know. It's like, I mean, I thought Corona was going to crawl in here and kill me, but, you know, I'm tired of waiting. So maybe I'll go outside and, you know, drink a beer.
Yeah, I mean, it's they hit a brick wall, I think. That's what they say. The vaccination is slow, so they're getting desperate.
Yeah, and this is literally 2,000 in a county that has, like, I'm trying to think, 300,000 people. It's not even 1% in 2 months. You know, so they are just dead in the water. There's nothing there to even think about. So that's good. We have stopped them flat. And it's just going to get worse because now in terms of like the resistance, because now there's so much vax damage that's becoming publicized. You can't, you know, the internet is just all these groups that are springing up everywhere. People are communicating the idea among themselves.
Yeah.
Even VAERS now is like, at some point they're going to have to start releasing some of this stuff. I mean, they put out 3,000 deaths this week. Bear in mind that there's like 1,200 deaths in the United States typically that VAERS would pop up on on a 250 million vaccinations, right? So when you see 3,000 in a week, I think that's probably a signal, Tim, don't you? That something wrong with the product, you know? So now we're going to have a civil war is what we're going to have.
Well, they're trying to push it, I mean, to that point, because
they will try to,
people are not going to.
What else can they do? They've offered, I mean, they can't offer any more burgers and fries. I mean, it's just not going to work. This is a triumph, Tim, of the independent media, because we were able to get the information to the public quick enough so that they stopped taking the vax. And now we can start getting the effects of the vax revealed to the public, so they the people who are not been vaccinated will know the truth, and they will, you know, when you start seeing this bloodbath, when they start doing 3,000-4,000 deaths a week, you know, they're not going to get anyone to take the darn thing, and people will resist it with physical force if they have to.
Well, this kind of goes with the. You know, obviously the call to social media and the tech companies suppress free speech, monitor these things, police speech, because they need to suppress information, calling it disinformation. That's such a ham-fisted attempt. Is sort of what they've created with the system. It's called, as opposed to panopticon, a synopticon. You know, where the entire system, we all report on ourselves. And the Biden administration is calling on Americans, this is supposedly the war on domestic terrorism, to spy on friends, neighbors, and family, to report extremist behavior, views to authorities, just views. And so American people are becoming increasingly aware that the government surveillance and corporate censorship have combined to keep to monitor people and also kind of keep them, I guess, fooled or ignorant and also controlled. We had recently Tucker Carlson talked about on his show, he accused the NSA of surveilling him, spying on him, presumably because he has connections to what government Biden administration, I guess, thinks of as extremists, I guess, you know, Trump supporters or conservatives, whatever. And of course, all these people are domestic terrorists, of course, you know, on the minds of the mind of the Biden administration. Because what we have a situation now, you have mass electronic surveillance of literally trillions of phone calls and messages worldwide with no warrant, of course, because the Fourth Amendment is now just pretty much a dead letter. This became apparent about 15 years ago with the NSA during the George W. Bush administration, when the NSA was caught, you know, electronically surveilling, spying on people without a warrant. Of course, nothing was done about that. The original idea is, if there is a target that's suspicion, the FBI would go before the FISA court. It's and the FISA court, I think it's the Foreign Influence Surveillance Act, I think it was passed in 1978.
Yeah.
And the idea is it's a secret court, which is problematic in itself, but they give a warrant based on evidence provided by the FBI. Now, pretty much it's a rubber stamp. More than 99% of the warrant requests are approved. So all they have to do is say this person's a bad person. They issue the warrant, but they didn't even go through that process. But nevertheless, as technology has become more digital as opposed to analog, and it's just a question of scooping up all that data and storing it out in Utah somewhere, the big data mining center, which can be retrieved at any given time. And since it's all digital, it's all tracked and put in more or less a file that we all have. And since we all communicate this way through text messages, emails, even our purchases, all this information is being vacuumed up and stored somewhere. What we type on our keyboards and on our internet searches are monitored. I think Facebook has a policy where they say, they indicate that you may have been radicalized. Some warning pops up by your the content you're looking on. Now, how do they know that unless they're monitoring what you're looking at? So we've kind of just become accustomed to this. But the idea is that when Tucker accuses the NSA of spying, that's necessarily a government alphabet of soup agents doing it. It's all the other connected corporations and big data. It's the fact that where you purchase everything with a credit card, or buy your books online, you buy things online, or you do your searches online, and all that's being vacuumed up and being monitored. And based on that, you have, I guess, some government agencies like the FBI or NSA or CIA, but you just have big data corporations like Facebook and Google with their algorithms. They're storing that data too. And so, basically it's become a system where really privacy is just gone now. And we all monitor each other. That coupled with the fact that now you have sort of a culture shift where Americans used to at least give lip service to privacy and Fourth Amendment and freedom of speech and these things. But now as those things have eroded, I guess they're just not taught anymore. Succeeding generations now have a little regard for that or understanding of it, and they're perfectly happy with something like a social credit system or your cancel culture, where your online profile or your search history can be used to fire you or deny you acceptance into a school or something. We've seen that where acceptances in schools have been withdrawn based on online history in these things, and people have just become accepted. This is what they call the Synopticon, and it's pretty much everything has been constructed. And this is probably something they originally had planned out back in the 50s, when they started talking about this stuff. But it really is something that people should be aware of, because they get you with convenience, right? It's whether, look at your typical automobile, a modern, new automobile, all the gadgets in it, it's all based on monitoring, whether it's navigation help or Bluetooth or pretty soon you'll be walking through your house and Alexa will tell you, remind you to get your vaccination, right? That's not
that far fetched. Alexa, it already does.
So there you go.
I have a Tesla. It has a self-driving feature. I'm perfectly aware that it is a new world order device,
mm-hmm.
But it's such a handy gadget. Because it does drive itself basically at places that I would crash. You end up buying the darn thing, it's like the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have one, but we always take one with us if we travel,
mm-hmm.
because it's just indispensable when you travel. Make reservations, know where you are, communicate back to, these states. They give you these gadgets that are so handy that you get sucked in, but, they are monitoring you. That's the price that you pay. And they're not monitoring you for good purposes. They're not trying to keep us safe. Eventually, this will end up, if they have the way, with mental control over us,
Which well, that's I think what is it all- is, because the fact that you're even aware of it polices what you say. It's a chilling effect, right?
Oh, exactly right. No. And then when they add, if the technology that we talked about briefly last week, where they've got you know, implants for the mind, for the brain, that are that'll be rolled out quickly. Well, you know, since they can see you, since they can control your money, and since they've got things inside you that will control behavior, you're literally a robot at that point. Mm-hmm. So if you want to avoid that, you have to rebel now. I can't wait for, you know, all this stuff to get rolled out, and you accept it. And then you go, well, I don't really like being a robot. It's too late. God, you have to not let them put the chips in your kid's head. And, you know, you have to find some way to carve out some sense of economic privacy. This is one of the reasons that I think that leaving the cities and moving to the small towns is such a critical thing right now, because you can get into a group of like-minded people and then create economic activity among yourselves, which will not be just something on the government grid.
Yeah. You can't have civilized restraints on technology just because they can't do it doesn't mean they should be allowed to do it. I mean, it's almost like, I remember back when surveillance or illegal wiretapping scandal broke during the George W. Bush administration. Of course, this is during the war on terror. So everyone was using that excuse. Well, they're just monitoring terrorists. Well, it turns out they weren't. They were souping up all the, scooping up all the data and storing it, and it was completely illegal. In fact, they know it was illegal because Congress had to pass a law to legalize it ex post facto, which in itself is illegal. But no one was ever prosecuted for these crimes. They were crimes that carried, you know, real hard time. But the president, obviously the president ordered it, wasn't prosecuted, nor any of his underlings, director of CIA or director of NSA. So, you know, if some of these bigwigs had been prosecuted, that might have restrained it a little bit. But the American people didn't hold them to it. And the political Congress didn't do it. Might be because Congress was, well, one reason why they didn't do it is maybe because they were blackmailed because they were wiretapped, you know, and so this, it's one thing is the problem is just the realization that Americans, you know, actually think they have free speech the way that they think their vote matters, right? And it's that illusion which allows the system like this to exist and expand. You know, we participate in ourselves. Just like every time we use a smartphone, we're providing data to it. Every time we go on Facebook and we're providing the information we need for these things, for the social media. Social media pretty much destroyed the internet, because before that, the internet was anonymous. Mostly, and you could you really could express yourself. But social media just promoted the narcissism and the nonsense. At the same time, it tagged everybody. So now, if you look at most sites, when you go on and ask for a comment, you have to sign on, identify yourself. Whereas in the past, it was anonymous. So you have a lot more interesting comments when it's anonymous than when you have to identify yourself. But it's just presumed that they should know who you are. You know, why should they know who you are? Why do you have to know who I am to read my comment? You know, because they want to know who's saying it.
Yeah, well, good point. And I mean, to me, the place that Google and Facebook and Microsoft store data is DARPA.
Yeah. You
know, this is where they store it. The cloud, so-called. What's the cloud? DARPA. It's nothing. It's just the U.S. government. You know, when you talk about synopticon and the panopticon, I mean, the word means all seeing.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of people, there's this idea that it's a fancy prison. It was really a system of inspection. Bentham, you know, talked about the inspection principle, mm-hmm. so that inmates could be viewed at all times. That's why it was designed as a kind of a hub, you know, and so that one or two people could actually see every single person in the prison at all time. The prisoner was never outside of the inspection. And this, I'm sad to say, is the basis for, you know, the world we live in. Bentham couldn't have been a more Masonic cesspool. And these principles, they became the basis for a lot of the U.S. prison system. I mean, it's amazing that Bentham got panopticons built all over the of Britain. And then these things were then modeled into the United States. And so when you think of the word lockdown, which yes. we've just been explaining, it actually is a panopticon expression. It was comes from prisons in which, you know, they could see everything and at one time lock all of the prisoners, give all of the prisoners a single order, and that would be carried out. So when you talk about us being in a panopticon, which means, you know, all seeing, and we're under a lockdown, I mean, you know, the idea that we're in a mechanical slave state is not far-fetched at all, Tim. I mean, they are trying to build it around us. And of course, with the vaccine, I think they're going to try to cull the herd at the same time and to weaken the people who are vaxxed. But, you know, what is good news is that what I call the purification, the people who buy into the propaganda are going to have a horrendous fate, I think, going forward. There's no question. Those of us who don't, we will be more easy to organize because there'll be few of us to organize, but we will have a higher level of skepticism to the panopticon, right? Because we will have seen, I think this next year will be a clarification for everyone that we just are going to have to fight, because these guys are absolutely intent on creating the panopticon and reducing the population of the prisoners.
Yeah, Jeremy Bentham's the panopticon. It's the idea of the few or one watch the many, and the synopticon. I think the term was coined by Norwegian sociologist Thomas Matheson, who described a society in which the few are watched by the many. With the panopticon, one to many, you know, is the relationship, but with the one being the controlling authority, the synopticon is many to many. It's a many-to-many relationship, and any one person can be monitored by many people. So, yeah. So, and of course, we, like I said, people, we're all nodes in the system to the extent that we use the technology. This is important. People holding up, you know, again, people with mobile phones posting results to their social media pages. They're not really aware of it. They're not conscious agents of the system. They're just nodes in it. And so they're brought in, and they did this gradually, again, with connectivity, with 5G, Internet of Things, all that convenience and these things. If it had been told people this would, you know, again, if from the get-go there would be resulting 24/7 monitoring, people never would have bought into it. They said, that's creepy. But they let people get, you know, gradually accepting it and also dependent upon it. So that now they think, people think they need smartphones to survive. You know, it's like, and businesses, it's the same way that businesses, a good example to put out, yeah, how this all kind of works is the, this goes into the whole COVID response thing, is the panopticon relies on these corporate relationships. They're all part of it. And so the distinction between NSA or CIFBI and Google or Facebook or, you know, the telecom companies, they can become very blurred. They overlap, but also with the going back to the COVID-19 and the lockdown situation, calling it a lockdown because that's an interesting term they use. It was like you locked down prisoners. We're all prisoners. Is the response to COVID? It wasn't so much the governmental response to it, which it's easy to ignore or ridicule because it's government. But the fact that you walked out and went to the store, and all the stores were preaching the same line. There, you know, you had the disembodied voice telling you to mask up or stay 6 feet apart, and for, you know, all the sports teams, Hollywood, yeah. Movies, they're all singing from the same same songbook, and that it shows that coordination, the entire system, that's the synthesis there, preaching that one thing. If you lived in a free society, you'd have a lot of dissidence in that system. You say, wait a second, or questions being asked. It goes to the whole thing with the Biden administration trying to suppress. The Biden administration trying to suppress with this, and this is all part of this, of the synopticon, is naturally when you're trying to impose, just think about it, just like you're trying to mandate people get jabbed with an experimental gene therapy drug. there's going to be a lot of dissidents, a lot of disagreement, a lot of debating about that. Yeah. It's perfectly natural. And to just dismiss that as disinformation, dangerous to public health, shows you just how fragile and how empty their arguments are, just brute force what they're doing. Because now they got the, basically the bully pulpit of the White House and these corporations, these government to say this. But this look at it, you're an individual and you critically think about this. Wait a second. You've locked down society for 18 months. You destroyed the economy. You ran up the debt. You scared the hell out of everybody. Made all these claims about a pandemic, none for which there's no evidence for. We've been caught lying about masks, about the death rates, all these things about treatments and all this stuff. And now you get the gall to try to suppress free expression on the internet regarding your toxic jab. And you have outfits like the CDC, World Health Organization, organizations that are provably corrupt, lie machines, the propaganda machines themselves. The people just going to accept this? I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah, it is absurd. And they are reducing our capacity, or trying to reduce our capacity to kind of have thinking. Because, first of all, when you can't socialize, you don't get a chance to develop the Socratic arguments and things. And so they're replacing, kind of thought with emojis, And by the way, there's a new emoji that will be out very shortly. They've already actually brought it out, but it won't be available for the public for another couple of weeks. It is the pregnant man.
Okay, that proves that, that gender is just a social construct. Sex is just a social construct.
There's a pregnant man emoji that I have actually seen. I'm not making this up. And they come in different races. So you this is, at least they're multicultural.
Yes.
Black pregnant man and, different kinds of pregnant men. But the question is what will this emoji represent? I was thinking it might actually be seen as the idea that the government is a cesspool of maniacs trying to destroy natural humanity. I don't know if what will happen to the use of this emoji, but there's just so much disinformation, and the education system is horrendous, and I mean, really, without the only thing that's kind of kept humanity's spirit in existence over the last 10 years has been the independent media. Mm-hmm. Mainstream media is 100% just a propaganda device. They're all, and of course, culture through the movies and things, it's, there's just nothing there for anyone who's a real human to participate in. So it's up to us. We have to create our own connections and sort of help us think, create the Socratic method for all of us, so we can all think better about our current circumstance. We're at a critical moment in time, and it's hopeful that everyone will find the energy, to try to make the world the way we want it to be. Find ways to do it.
Talk about when Biden administration, when Biden says we're killing people with misinformation.
Yeah, yeah.
How many thousands of people died because of the misinformation regarding the necessity of ventilators?
Well, name one.
Yeah.
I mean, name someone that I understood your point, but just name one person who actually died because of misinformation. He's talking about people are dying all over the place because of misinformation. Name one. Mm-hmm. Show me one.
Yeah, but you can find thousands of people who died who were put on ventilators when they shouldn't have.
I mean, Cuomo and Christie, yeah. they murdered tens of thousands of people. Where was the reporting about that?
Yeah.
So yeah, they manipulate reality to
but the thousands create... of people who died in retirement homes because they had to be isolated because of COVID. So they suffered neglect. I mean, there's no accountability for that. That's just, whatever. Well, the good sign, again, the fact that they're hysterically calling out, attempt, desperate attempt to stifle debate is a good sign.
It is a good sign, just like the insanity of the vaccine incentives yes. is a good sign. You know, and you know, my response to the you know, like a free spin on the lottery if I get vaccinated, my response is a pregnant man emoji.
Yeah,
you know, that would be how I would like how I would respond to this you know, this attempt at you know, like seducing me to like get the vax.
And it's at the very least, it's amusing. So
yeah, it is,
buddy. Yeah. So whenever you know you can you, something you know so, someone gives you a reason to laugh, that's always a good.
I think the pregnant man emoji will have quite a future, but I don't think it's what they intend.
No,
I mean,
no,
this kind of stuff is not going to condition anybody. It's people will see it for what it is and will use it in a.
Yeah, it's like that, you know, that tedious. gay choir scene, "We're coming for your children." Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the warning.
Thanks for the warning. Right. So, no, they are trying in every way possible, you know, to destroy us. I had a strange conversation. This guy who lives in Seattle, we're talking about Seattle, and I was saying that this was oligarchic, you know, activity. And he goes, well, I don't believe that. I mean, what do they gain by trashing Seattle? What do they gain? And I said, Charlie, you know, where is your mind? Look, he was thinking that because real estate values go down, they're losing their real estate values. Charlie, they own the printing press. Money is nothing to them. What they're gaining is a destroyed middle class. The Europeans that had small businesses are all losing their ability to be free. That's what this is about. When you look out and you see the fentanyl brigade passed out everywhere, cars burning, you saw the video that I sent you of Portland.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see that activity, there is no middle class power in that area. That area has been taken over, been made an autonomous zone by the fentanyl brigade. And those that have middle class power, businesses, their own social networks, they've lost it. Okay, they defeated us in these cities with the open society funded DAs and mayors. We have to reorganize ourselves, get out of town, you know, set ourselves up in these small towns and learn to resist in those areas.
Yeah, they don't use money; they create the money.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is that someone who does, you know, it goes to the psychic power of the fiat currency.
Yeah.
It's just mind control. It has nothing to do with anything with reality. It's just used for social control. You think you're like some kind, you know, he thinks that he's a smart person because he has all this money. Well, so what? Big deal. If you have so much power, go and fix Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have any power at all. You can't, you're just another white person wandering the streets looking for policemen. You know, you have nothing. So this is the thing. You have to think in a different perspective to understand your reality. And, you know, I do think the purification is going forward very nicely. When I look at the data and see no new vaccinations in my area over the last couple of weeks, I think, okay, they got up to close to like 40% and then we stopped them. We stopped them right at the, you know, no, not another one. So now the burgers and the $1 million lottery tickets, that's all behind us. The damage from the vax is going to come out and we will have a clear signal that we have to fight. We've got to organize. You know, these maniacs, we just can't let them have the planet, Tim. It's just not right. You know?
Nope.
We need a future.
Okay, Joe.
Tim, next week we'll have the pregnant man emoji that we can exchange whenever, you know, something is worthy of that designation.
I have to look that up.
Yeah, until then, I'll send you the link.
Okay.
All right, brother.
Take care.
I'll talk. Yeah, bye-bye.